Firefighting in occupied Al-Quds, Israeli forces kill a Palestinian in a shooting that leaves one Israeli dead. Sudan's opposition says a deal to reinstate the ousted prime minister has no value, urging anti-coup protests to go on. And unrest in several U.S. cities over the acquittal of a white vigilante who killed two people during last year's anti-racism rallies. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisunisha Ahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Now, we are receiving breaking news from the occupied West Bank. A short while ago, Israeli forces shot dead a Palestinian in the old city of Al-Quds. The Israeli military is alleging that two Palestinians approached one of the gates of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. One of them then opened fire, killing an Israeli settler and wounding three people, including two Israeli officers. The military says his forces immediately fired back and killed the Palestinian on the spot. The other Palestinian reportedly escaped. Palestinian resistance fronts are now reacting to the development, pouring praise for the move, calling for the struggle against occupation to continue. Hamas says such operations are a natural response to the Israeli regime's growing crimes against Palestinians. Earlier, I spoke to our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, who told us more about this victim and the aftermath of the incident. Let's take a listen.
Well, the identity of this Palestinian man is known now. Fadi Abu Shkhedem, 42 years old, from the refugee camp of Shafat in occupied Al-Quds. Hamas movement, in its statement, said that Fadi Abu Shkhedem is one of its leaders in Shafat refugee camp. And now we are receiving that Israeli forces are on their way to the refugee camp of Shafat. It seems that they are planning to destroy the Fadi Abu Shkhedem. Israeli crimes and atrocities have never come to an end. Every day, raid West Bank areas, villages, cities, areas in occupied Al-Quds. On a daily basis, they arrest Palestinians, and a number of Palestinians had been killed during peaceful demonstrations and protests against the illegal settlements and against the separation wall. So the Israeli forces continue their crimes, killing people, people, unarmed people, peaceful people, and it seems, according to experts, as they continue to say, Palestinians are fed up. They have the right to defend themselves, to defend their homes and lands, to defend also their children in order not to be arrested. Children under the age of 10 are being arrested in Al-Quds without any legal basis.
Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip held a press conference to reflect the national refusal of a UK move to ban Hamas and consider it a terrorist organization. They expressed that this is an aggression that targets Palestinian resistance.
The Hamas movement held a press conference during which all Palestinian factions condemned Britain Home Secretary Priti Patel's announcement that she's seeking to declare Palestinian group Hamas a terrorist organization. Palestinian factions say this move targets the Palestinian resistance and comes to the benefit of Israeli occupation at the expense of Palestinian rights.
All Palestinian factions here today condemn this decision and we consider it another aggression added to the history against Palestine. This is a violation against international law that gives Palestinians the right to defend themselves. Considering Hamas as a terrorist organization is a violation of our people's right of expression and freedom. We call on the British Parliament to refuse this decision.
The ban, which must be approved by Parliament, would make it illegal in Britain to be a member of Hamas or to express support for the group or facing up to 14 years in prison. The UK government argued that it was not possible to distinguish between Hamas's politica and military wings, calling Hamas fundamentally anti-Semitic.
We really condemn this British move that targets all Palestinians and shows the British support for the Israeli entity against Palestinians. The UK has first given Israel the green light to go ahead with its crimes by the Balfour Declaration that we are still now paying its price. Instead of redeeming this declaration and standing by the Palestinians, the UK gives the green light to demolish the Palestinian resistance.
Hamas, a Palestinian resistance group that fights against Israeli atrocities, has ruled the Gaza Strip since 2007. Hamas expressed the British government's decision as shocking and accused the UK of continuing with its aggression against Palestinian people.
Palestinian factions here have expressed anger at the British government's decision to ban Hamas's activities in the country. They regard the move as a blatant support for Israel at the expense of Palestinian rights. They say the resistance front has the right to defend Palestinians with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
And now a major development unfolding in Sudan's politics. The military is to reinstate ousted Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok following an agreement reached with civilian leaders. The National Umma Party says Hamdok will form a cabinet of technocrats and that all political detainees will be released. But Sudan's main civilian opposition coalition says it does not recognize any political agreement with the military, and it is encouraging anti-coup demonstrators to continue. The developments come on the heels of a weeks-long protest to demand the return of a civil government. The country plunged into chaos after top general Abdel Fattah al-Burhan toppled the transitional government late last month and detained civilian leaders, including the prime minister. At least 40 anti-coup protesters have been killed since then. Political commentator Muzan al-Neil says anti-coup protesters in Sudan are demanding a lot more than simply a return of the ousted prime minister Hamdok. She believes that it is time for the military to stop its interference in politics.
And we are starting to hear rumors about the return of the prime minister early last evening. Early as the rumors were heard, we saw statements and social media posts from resistance committees assuring the public that regardless of this, whether this rumor is true or not, today's march, the Millions March of November 21st, is taking place, and that the demands of the protesters are not limited to the return of the Prime Minister or his cabinet, and that they still stand by their three no's, which is no compromise, no negotiation, and no partnership with the military. One of the seven demands that were put out by the resistance committees on October 30th include a law that totally bans any interference from the military in politics, it bans any military personnel from interfering in political process while they are still in the military. And on the other side, what matters to the protesters is the path that the government will take, and a path that leads to economic justice and to criminal justice cannot be one that the military will be able to infiltrate, because it will start first by removing the investments that are under control of the military and outside the control of the Ministry of Finance and the civilian government, and bringing them back to the control of the people. These are one of the things that the protesters and the Sudanese people are asking for, to ensure that the military will no longer have the financial capability to take over the political process as they are doing right now.
Now, fury and reactions in the U.S. over the acquittal of a militia member who shot dead two anti-racism protesters last year. The The court verdict that the shootings by Kyle Rittenhouse was in self-defense is triggering a lot of heated debate. There have been protests across several cities. In Chicago, Black Lives Matter protesters turned out carrying signs of red white supremacy equals terrorism. Protests also erupted in Tampa, Florida, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. The verdict has raised fierce criticism of the justice system and its preferential treatment of white supremacists. There's also renewed debate over the boundaries of gun rights and self-defense in the U.S.
Justice system in the U.S. in the spotlight after a Wisconsin court cleared homicide charges against white teenager Kyle Rittenhouse. He was in court over his fatal shooting of two men and injuring another during anti-racism protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin in August 2020. The court ruled that Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. It rejected the argument of prosecutors accusing the 18-year-old of provoking violence during the Kenosha rallies.
It's been a long day. It's been a long 3 weeks. We're very happy with the verdict. We're happy that the jury took the time, put in an incredible amount of effort.
Gun rights supporters welcomed the verdict, too. Former President Donald Trump also congratulated Rittenhouse and defended the shooting as self-defense. Republican lawmakers were happy, too, with Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson saying justice has been served. But others do not think so. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, a Democrat, believes to call the verdict a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. And the victims' friends say they are sad about what the system has done.
I am, like I said, not surprised at what happened here today, but I am heartbroken.
Several civil rights and racial justice groups denounced the verdict as a travesty. The American Civil Liberties Union says the trial highlights an urgent need for reforms to both police and the legal system. And gun control advocates warn the verdict could inspire a new wave of armed vigilantism. President Joe Biden, reacting to the verdict, says it leaves many Americans, including himself, feeling angry and concerned. But the jury has spoken.
I stand by what the jury has concluded. The jury system works, and we have to abide by it.
Biden wants everybody to be peaceful as people fill the streets across the U.S. to protest what they see as the failure of the justice system. Unrest broke out in some locations. Commentator Kyla Papuche says Rittenhouse's case shows increasing polarization in the U.S. and eroding trust in the government there.
It is also a foreshadowing of the deep division, the polarization that is increasing and getting worse in the United States. There is more growing apathy, distrust, and zero confidence in every facet of the state in the United States government, not just the judicial system.
Rittenhouse has also reignited debate about gun rights and the boundaries of self-defense in the U.S. As critics remain unconvinced and people are on the streets, the standoff over the American gun culture, racism, and vigilantism appears far from over.
And scuffles break out in the Netherlands as protests against the government's new coronavirus restrictions continue for a second consecutive night. The latest footage shows clashes between police and protesters in The Hague. Thousands of people also took to the streets in the capital, Amsterdam, despite the strong presence of security forces. This follows an outbreak of violence on Friday night in Rotterdam. Three people were injured in the city after police fired shots and water cannons to disperse angry demonstrators. Dozens of people were also arrested. Similar anti-lockdown protests were also held in other European countries on Saturday, including Denmark, Croatia, and Austria.
Tens of thousands take to the streets of the Austrian capital ahead of the nation's fourth general lockdown, affecting the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike.
This is just one of several rallies taking place across the city just the day after the government announced that vaccinations will become mandatory from February.
Around 2 million of the country's 9 million residents have refused to get vaccinated.
I've not been vaccinated, and I believe this is a bluff on the part of the government. They want to put people under pressure. When vaccination becomes mandatory, I will stay at home. I believe everyone should be able to make their own choice.
I'm here because I'm against the vaccination for everybody. I want to decide myself. It's my body, and so I don't want to tell anyone to me that I have to go to vaccination.
The federal government has blamed the right-wing opposition Freedom Party, the FPÖ, for fueling public anger at a time of national crisis. Police forces confirmed that right-wing extremists, including convicted neo-Nazis, had taken part in the rallies, which remained largely peaceful, despite several instances of clashes and arrests. Austria is now reporting well over 15,000 new infections a day, with the total death toll almost reaching 12,000 people. Health experts say without compulsory vaccinations, the country will only stumble into new lockdowns every 3 or 4 months. Homaleski, Vienna.
Bulgarians are casting their ballots in a presidential runoff that is pitting a former fighter pilot against a university professor. The first round of voting last weekend, the incumbent president, Rumen Radev, won 49% of the vote against 22% of Anastas Gerichkov, his academic rival. Gerichkov is backed by Bulgaria's former prime minister, Boyko Borisov, who was toppled in April, but Radev became popular as he supported the massive protests against Borisov in 2020. Radev is also a member of a political party that won the parliamentary election last week. The party called We Continue the Change is in favor of battling influence peddling in the EU's poorest country, while the position of the president in Bulgaria seems to be a formality. It will be of importance when it comes to appointing interim cabinets. And the first exit results are expected to come shortly after the polls close on Sunday evening. With that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Muslims' duty towards the all-inclusiveness of Islam, promoting Islam's viewpoint.
This is a part of a speech delivered on October 24, 2021, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic and foreign participants in the 35th International Islamic Unity Conference.
The Quran has verses about security and the safety of people in society. Truly, if the hypocrites and those in whose hearts is a disease and those who stir up sedition in the city desist not, we shall certainly stir you up against them. The Holy Quran, Surah 33, verse 60. Another verse says, when there comes to them some matter touching public safety or fear, they divulge it. If they had only referred it to the messenger, the Holy Quran, Surah 4, verse 83. These verses mean that Islam has an opinion on all important aspects of social life. The verses I have mentioned are a small part of those that exist in the Holy Quran. Hundreds of such examples can be seen in the Quran. A person who is interested in and is familiar with the Quran and its rules understands that this is the Islam that the Quran teaches. The kind of Islam that the Quran defines and introduces is an Islam that is involved in all aspects of life and that has opinions, viewpoints, and demands. Well, we should know this, and we should answer those who try to deny this clear truth.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
On the other hand, because there are social issues and important tasks that need to be done, such as building a society and civilization in Islam, Islam attends to the issue of governance as well. It is not the case that Islam would demand social order, but not clarify the issue of leadership for religious and worldly affairs. When religion becomes a system related to the individual and society, and becomes a system that has opinions and demands on all individual and social issues, then it is necessary to determine who it is at the head of this society and what characteristics this head should have. Thus, religion must appoint an imam.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashid Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As the clock is ticking for a new round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, Washington is showing more signs of unwillingness to settle disagreements despite earlier comments made by U.S. officials. On Thursday, Washington announced new sanctions on 6 Iranian nationals and one entity, accusing them of intimidating and influencing American voters during last year's presidential election. Iran's foreign ministry condemned the new sanctions as illegitimate and baseless. It said the new bans are a continuation of the failed maximum pressure policy adopted by the previous U.S. administration. Tehran also highlighted Washington's long history of meddling in other countries' internal affairs and playing a blame game to deceive the American public. Analysts say there is no evidence of any interference by Iran in the U.S.'s 2020 presidential race.
There's no evidence whatsoever that Iran or Russia had any meddling, any interference with American elections. The only meddlers in the election was really the Democrat Party and the Mossad and the Israeli intelligence operations and the CIA. They've been perfecting these programs for over 15 years, and they've undermined the elections in other countries, such as Ukraine and Venezuela, and that was admitted to by people like John McCain and John Bolton and Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. These elections in America have been farces and completely manipulated by the technology that the U.S. developed for influencing and corrupting other elections. But they are attempting to constantly brand Iran as a threat to the United States and trying to whip up frenzy in the American people.
U.S. President Joe Biden and his Democratic Party repeatedly criticized Donald Trump during his term for his way of dealing with Iran and withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear agreement. But ironically, since he came to power, Biden persisted in his predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran and even imposed more sanctions against the Islamic Republic. This is why U.S. media and officials have admitted that the campaign against Iran has failed. Tehran held several rounds of talks with the FIPOR Plus One group between April and June with the aim of removing the sanctions, but no breakthrough was reached. Now, as the new round of talks scheduled to start on November 29th draws nearer, the U.S. measures against Iran further question Washington's sincerity about the issue, regardless of which party is at the helm in the White House.
Rights groups and families of missing persons held a press conference in Karachi to once again voice their grave concerns over the non-recovery of their loved ones, slamming the government for its lack of seriousness in their recovery. Last Saturday, families of Shia missing persons changed their direction towards military offices known to be the real powerhouses in Pakistan. Victims' families are outraged over the law enforcement agencies who they now accuse for clamping down on their right to protest. They are calling on the government to prosecute those responsible for abduction of their loved ones in the court of law. The family says state institutions are open for talks with Takfiri terrorists who have killed over 70,000 Pakistanis but are not serious to recover missing persons.
From 2009, we are protesting for the safe release of my father, and I have knocked every door of justice to the Supreme Court, High Court, and on the Commission of Enforced Disappearance, but I didn't get any positive result, or yet still I don't know where my father is.
The first post 9/11 reported case of enforced disappearances was Dr. Afia, who was kidnapped from Karachi along with her three kids in 2003.
Those who at the end of the day come for the agreement, those who at the end of the day come for the negotiations that we have your men and we'll release them, let's say after 2 months, after 3 months, those are the real people. These agencies, these people who should not be named in this country, these people who are above the law, who are beyond the law, these are the real authorities, these are the real officers whose job is to run this country, but actually they are destroying this country.
Enforced disappearances is a chronic human rights violation in Pakistan, with more than 7,000 complaints of enforced disappearances since 2011. where the real number might be much higher than the official figure. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
People in Indian-controlled Kashmir have closed businesses, shops and other routine activities following a shutdown call by the pro-freedom outfit Hurriyat Conference over the recent civilian killings in a suspected encounter in Srinagar earlier this week. The streets of Srinagar appeared deserted and guarded by the government forces. Since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, New Delhi's crackdown on pro-freedom groups and its activities has kept the space for dissent here, thus adding to the frustrations among the local residents. Analysts call it an enforced silence. The shutdown comes 4 days after the killing of civilians in a suspected encounter in Indian-controlled Kashmir's capital city, Srinagar. Denouncing the police claims, the families of victims protested against the dubious killings and the secret burial of civilians. This forced Indian authorities to return the dead bodies to their respective families for a proper burial. Political leaders, social activists, and residents took to social media in support of victim families, urging authorities to conduct a probe into the killings. 14-year-old Noha Altaf has bid farewell to her father. What she is demanding now is justice.
Hamari body dena hamara basic right.
Decent burial was our right. They have done no favor to us. But now is the time for them to do justice. The culprits must be hanged for killing my innocent father, so that it sets an example and such incidents should never happen again. None in Kashmir must go through what we have gone through.
According to police, 4 people were killed in Monday's encounter. The bodies of 2 civilians have been handed over, while the 3rd civilian has been buried in an inaccessible area and the identity of the 4th person remains unknown. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-controlled Kashmir.
The long-standing rivalry between Russia and the United States has taken a new turn. This time, Washington is mulling whether or not to recognize the presidency of Vladimir Putin if he is re-elected. This is proposed in a cross-party resolution introduced by 2 U.S. congressmen. It calls for the U.S. to end its recognition of Vladimir Putin's presidency beyond his current term, which expires in May 2024. The bill claims that the recent amendments to the Russian Constitution, which enabled the Russian president to run for another term, are legally void. The motion has drawn fierce condemnation from the Kremlin.
Every time we think there is nothing more absurd, aggressive, unfriendly, and unconstructive that can come from that side of the ocean, and every time we are wrong, unfortunately, this is a perfect demonstration not only to Russia, but to all countries of the world that the United States officially interferes in the internal affairs of other countries.
It was only a few years ago when I believe around 100,000 advertisements made on Western social media were enough cause to launch investigations, create this whole supposedly Russiagate scandal accusing Trump of some sort of collusion or whatever. This seems to be a vastly higher level of meddling into the affairs of a foreign country. So it seems very hypocritical on its surface.
But the U.S. is no stranger to getting involved in other nations' internal affairs. Just this Tuesday, President Joe Biden banned members of the Nicaraguan government from entering the United States. He alleged that Nicaragua's November 7 vote was rigged in favor of President Daniel Ortega. In response, the Nicaraguan Congress denounced Washington for violating the principle of non-intervention in its foreign policy. Washington's failure to recognize the elected leaders of such nations as Syria and Venezuela has also drawn strongly worded condemnations for years. The U.S., however, presses on with the interference, which runs contrary to the Charter of the United Nations.
It appears that once again, outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel has had to clean up a big mess for the EU. She spoke directly with the President of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, and now the migrant crisis on the Belarus-Poland border has eased. However, the EU is pressing ahead with fresh sanctions against Belarus.
These discussions, as always, are taking place among the member states in the Council in the atmosphere of confidentiality, and we never disclose any details about ongoing discussions about who will be or who might be on that sanctions list.
The EU accuses Belarus and Russia of weaponizing migration in retaliation for sanctions. Vladimir Putin claims the West is using migrants as an excuse to heighten tensions with Moscow and Minsk. Alexander Lukashenko says genuine refugees can seek asylum in Belarus, just like in any other country. Around 2,000 migrants had gathered in appalling conditions on the Belarus side of the Belarus-Poland border. Having been aggressively pushed back from the EU by Polish authorities, they have now been relocated to a warehouse in Belarus. They are mainly from the Middle East and Asia. A sizable number of EU legislators are furious at how the leaders of their countries have treated these migrants. The 27-nation bloc's policy, they say, is to prevent asylum seekers from coming here, which is in contravention of international law. Observers say there is a great deal of hypocrisy on display.
At the moment, they're opposed to Poland, for instance, building a wall on the Belarus border. But of course, the EU itself funded billions of euro to build a wall between Syria and Turkey.
Other political commentators regularly make the point Western powers have a special responsibility to take in refugees in the light of the devastating, destabilizing impact their aggressive foreign policy has had in Africa and the Middle East. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Another Palestinian prisoner has died in one of the Israeli jails as a result of medical negligence. Sam Amour, 39 years old, died in custody at the Israeli Soroka Hospital in Bir al-Sabah in Al-Naqab. Amour from Deir al-Balah City in the Gaza Strip was imprisoned since 2008, and he suffered from congenital heart problems. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, Amour was transferred several days ago from Nafha prison to Asqalam. He was then transferred to Soroka Hospital after his health deteriorated. The Prisoners Society held Israel responsible for Amour's death because of the deliberate medical negligence and inappropriate detention conditions.
Medical treatment is among the basic rights of each man according to all international laws. Many Palestinian prisoners have died because of medical negligence. Omar was suffering from serious deteriorated health conditions. Israeli prison authorities knew that he was in pain and had heart problems, but they never provided him with even medical examinations. It was a slow killing policy that Israel used against Omar and is now using against other prisoners as well.
227 Palestinian prisoners have died in Israeli jails and detention centers since 1967. Hundreds of other prisoners have lost their lives shortly after their release. Prisoners' advocacy groups say the main reason for the deaths of majority of those prisoners was lack of medical care.
Umur is the latest victim of Israel's deliberate medical negligence. This is one of the most prominent systematic policies that have killed many prisoners in Israeli jails. Since 1967, 227 prisoners have died behind bars. Israel continues its policies and crimes amid the international silence.
According to a statement by the Prisoners' Society, some 5,000 Palestinians are held in Israeli jails. Some 550 of the detainees suffer from very difficult health conditions due to chronic diseases and inhumane Israeli policy concerning their treatment. The death of Sami Amour sheds light on the suffering of hundreds of sick prisoners in Israeli jails. Palestinian prisoners' organizations call for an immediate international intervention to save the lives of these prisoners. They also warn that Israeli jails might turn into graves for severely ill detainees, as Israel insists on keeping them behind bars without offering appropriate medical care. Muna Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Yemen's Intisaf Organization for the Rights of Women and Children has held an event in the capital Sana'a to mark the International Day for Children's Rights. The local body released a report highlighting the tragic situation of Yemeni children amid the ongoing Saudi war and the blockade for the course from March 2015 to November 2021.
For 7 years, the Saudi-led coalition, with the support of the United States, has been carrying out airstrikes and killing Yemeni children. This is a flagrant violation of international law that guarantees the protection of children during conflicts and wars. The Saudi-led coalition seeks to destroy the future of the Yemeni people by targeting educational facilities and depriving the children of their basic rights. These children are the basic foundation for building a new Yemen when the war ends.
The report says 300 Yemeni children die every day due to the lack of health services. The number of children suffering from cancerous tumors has also reached 71,000 as a result of the Saudi-led coalition's use of internationally prohibited weapons and bombing residential areas.
There is injustice and grave violation of rights against the Yemeni children. On top of them, it is the right to live. Unfortunately, the Saudi-led coalition has targeted schools and disrupted the educational process. The right to access healthcare also does not exist amid the continued closure of Sana'a Airport and the lack of necessary medicines. When we talk about children's rights in Yemen, we feel pain, and only those who experienced it will feel this pain. The children of Yemen celebrate International Day for Children's Rights because it gives them hope despite their stolen rights.
Saudi Arabia and its regional allies launched a deadly war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of civilians, many of them women and children, and displaced millions more.
Yemenis say the atrocities of Saudi Arabia and the suffering of the Yemeni children are the results of the years-long war and siege imposed on the country. They believe that the UN's removal of Riyadh from the list of parties responsible for grave violations against children last year has emboldened the kingdom to continue its crimes in Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
July 14, 2015. After years of negotiations, Iran signed a deal with the US, the UK, France, Germany, China, and Russia, which put caps on Tehran's nuclear program in return for sanctions removal. The agreement was dubbed the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. At first, it seemed like there was a new era of cooperation between Iran and the West, but that optimism was soon shattered by Washington. In 2016, Donald Trump won the race to become the President of the United States. During his tenure, he adopted an increasingly hostile attitude toward Tehran. This enmity reached a peak in 2018 when Trump unilaterally pulled his country out of the Iran nuclear deal, violating an international accord and a Security Council resolution that endorsed it. He then reinstated previous sanctions on Tehran and even imposed new ones. At the same time, he threatened other parties to the deal, including its allies, with sanctions if they refused to comply with Washington's anti-Iran measures. Despite the US withdrawal, Tehran declared that it would continue respecting its commitments under the agreement. That is, if the remaining parties, referred to as the P4 plus 1 group, guaranteed Iran's benefits as was promised under the JCPOA. Iran showed ample patience for the other sides to honor their end of the bargain. In fact, the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, in its 16 reports, confirmed Tehran's full compliance with the JCPOA until 2019. It was in May that year, and a whole year after the US withdrawal, that the country started scaling back its commitments when Britain, France, and Germany failed to keep their end of the deal. Iran's remedial measures were in line with mechanisms foreseen in the text of the JCPOA, particularly Articles 36 and 37. The country, on numerous occasions, said it would reverse those measures if the other parties respected their commitments. But after more than 3 years following Washington's unilateral pullout, Iran could not see any change on the part of the Western signatories. Ironically, the new US administration under President Joe Biden persisted with its predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Between April and June this year, Tehran held talks with the P4 plus 1 group with the aim of removing the sanctions that had been illegally imposed on it. But no breakthrough was reached. Now, a new round of talks is scheduled to start on the 29th of November. Ahead of the negotiations, Iranian officials have declared that the talks must focus on the full removal of sanctions in a verifiable manner. They have also made it clear that they will not renegotiate the country's nuclear program.
As I said, these negotiations are aimed at removing the sanctions imposed by Americans through their violation of the JCPOA and Resolution 2231. We concluded nuclear negotiations in 2015, which resulted in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
Moreover, Tehran has emphasized that it will only engage in talks that lead to practical results.
We support the negotiations that guarantee our national interests, but Iran will not tie its economy and the lives of its people to the negotiations, nor will it allow negotiations for the sake of negotiations. We will not let the negotiations become attritional.
The talks between Iran and the P4+1 group will start on November 29th in Vienna, and Tehran will certainly take the other side's promises with a grain of salt, considering the West's record of violating its own commitments.
Thousands of people leaving their home countries in pursuit of a better life are now trapped in appalling conditions and fighting for survival at Belarus's western border with Poland. Their dream was to enter the EU, but now they are stuck behind barbed wires, battling freezing weather and hunger. Almost a dozen of them have already died, and fears are growing for the safety of others.
It's like so many of them doesn't have food, water, they have small kids, and they're freezing, and the weather is pretty cold. That's all I have to say.
It's no water, no food, no time, no life.
Mostly from Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, migrants have been stranded in a wooded area for weeks. Fed up with the dire living conditions, a group of them tried to cross into Poland on Tuesday. But Polish forces guarding the fortified border crossing used tear gas and water cannon to push them back.
You don't follow the orders.
That triggered some to throw stones at the border guards. The incident drawing this reaction from Moscow.
The behavior of the Polish side is completely unacceptable. I think the water cannons and tear gas and shots over the migrants' heads toward Belarus state, all of it reflects a desire to hide their own actions. And they cannot but understand that they violate all thinkable norms of the international humanitarian law and other international law norms.
The EU is accusing Belarus of engineering an unprecedented wave of migrants at Poland's border in revenge for the sanctions it's suffering from the bloc. Belarus, however, denies the allegations, accusing the EU of turning its back on the migrants and trying to shift the blame on Minsk to justify its new sanctions. Russia is backing Belarus in this dispute, with the Kremlin questioning the EU's double standards over the migrant crisis, warning that such approaches put the bloc in a bad position. The EU is now looking to widen the sanctions on Belarus. Reacting to the news of the new sanctions, President Alexander Lukashenko said Belarus does not want confrontation with bloc over the migrant crisis. Lukashenko even initiated a phone call with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Monday to discuss his proposal to end the crisis. Considering Belarus's earlier threat to shut down Russian gas supplies to Europe via pipelines that run through its territory, its latest reaction to the EU's fresh sanctions could be interpreted as a desire for de-escalation.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is a report that has been transmitted by Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. Luqman said to his son, the hypocrites have three signs. Their tongues are not in congruence with their hearts, and their hearts are not in congruence or in harmony with their actions, and their outer is not in harmony with their inner. So these are the three signs of a munafiq, or a person who is hypocrite. Dear brothers and sisters, hypocrisy is a dangerous disease which arises from a deficiency of one's personality and weakness of willpower. It is a very serious disease, and unfortunately we see in our day-to-day life people who are hypocrites. We see that they are kind of double-faced. Their action belies their words, and their appearance is one thing, their inner is something else. People who attempt to show themselves as something they are not, and whose inner aspects do not match up with their outer aspects, are typically weak people. No, they are devoid of courage and willpower. And of course, these are people who do not have the willpower, of course, most of these people, because if a person has a strong willpower, if a person has self-dignity and self-esteem, he will not try to be different from what he appears to be. He will not lie. His tongue will not be different from his heart. And his heart will not be different, or maybe his mind will not be different from his actions. So his outer will not be different from his inner because of his resolve, because of his willpower. But those people who have weak resolve, who do not have the courage and willpower, they behave treacherously with others as well as with themselves. Of course, there is no one more dangerous than them in the society, because they manifest something which is non-existent within themselves. They try to be pious while they are not. They try to be truthful while they are not. These people are the most dangerous people, because if you trust these people, you are going to put yourself in trouble. And it's very difficult to tell who is, for example, a hypocrite and who is not. Well, brothers and sisters, let's have a break. We will be back.
Changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor, cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. We discussed the hypocrites. And of course, they show a very beautiful outer appearance, while their inner reality is corrupt and polluted. So that's why Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam says, لِمُنَافِقٍ ثَلَاثُ عَلَامَاتٍ. The hypocrites have three signs. Their tongues are not in harmony with their hearts, and their hearts are not in harmony with their actions. And of course, their outer is not in harmony with their inner. So these are the three signs. There is a hadith from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. Now this hadith is not about hypocrisy, but this is more related to amana, of course. The Prophet of Islam has been narrated to have said, do not look only at the numbers of prayers, fasting, sessions, hajj, pilgrimage, night vigils, or good acts towards others of other people, even though these things are important. Rather, look at their truthfulness and trustworthiness. Now, hypocrisy is one thing, but truthfulness and trustworthiness is also another thing. But of course, you know, these two things are different things. Hypocrisy is totally different from being, you know, truthful, from being trustworthy.
People who are hypocrite, they are not trustworthy. People who are dual-faced or who are double-faced cannot be trusted. And because their appearance is one thing and their inner is something else. But when it comes to truthfulness, of course, those who are hypocrite, they can never be truthful, they can never be trustworthy, and they cannot be relied upon.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
When you look at the Islamic traditions, of course, it becomes clear that there are two definite signs of a true Muslim. One is truthfulness, and the other is trustworthiness. Truthfulness and trustworthiness, they go hand in hand with each other. They go hand in hand with each other. Even though acts of worship, such as prayer, fasting, and of course the Hajj pilgrimage, are all very important and instrumental in growth of human beings and also in the perfection of human beings, they are very much instrumental. These, of course, should not be considered the only signs of faith, because there are many people who pray, there are many people who perform Hajj and who apparently perform good deeds, but obviously these cannot be the only signs of good faith or the only signs of faith or iman. In order for a person to be a good person and in order for a person to be close to Allah and to be trusted, in order for a person to be a good mu'min, of course, it is important that these acts of worship like prayer, salat, sawm, and hajj, and also amr bil ma'ruf, these should be accompanied with the attributes of truthfulness and trustworthiness. Unless a person is truthful and trustworthy, he cannot be a good person. He will be a hypocrite. He will be someone like a dangerous person who cannot be trusted. And of course, as I said in one of the previous episodes, a person, since he is a social being, he needs to be trusted. He needs to be to interact with other people. And in order for him to be able to interact with other people, he should prove to be truthful. He should prove to be trustworthy. Otherwise, no one is going to trust him. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he
The United States is appealing a British judge's decision not to extradite Julian Assange, the Australian journalist and founder of WikiLeaks. In January, Judge Barretzer found that U.S. prison conditions would be too oppressive and that Assange would be likely to take his own life. In response, the United States has taken to the High Court to contest her findings about Assange's health. In addition, the United States has offered up diplomatic assurances, saying that it won't put Assange in oppressive prison conditions, which doctors have said would lead to suicide. So what exactly are these diplomatic assurances that the United States has offered? And can they actually be trusted? How come Assange's health is the center of the discussion when scores of legal experts, academics, journalists, and historians have all warned that this indictment currently poses the biggest threat to press freedoms? To answer these questions, I attended the court proceedings remotely as they unfolded in London's High Court. And this